Ryan had been fiddling with the locket for some time. It was small and delicate in his large, scarred fingers to begin with, and he had no real notion of how it worked. Anxiety was making him clumsy as he tried to find a way of opening and activating it. Doc came around to see where Ryan and JB were hunched. He was carrying coffee sub.
Gentlemen, perchance I could ask what you are attempting to do?
We're trying to open a damn locket some people gave Christy a while back. They said to use it if she ever needed help, but the damn thing won't open.
My dear Ryan, if you please.
Doc examined it, turning it briefly toward the firelight, then back again to shield his actions from any prying eyes, human or mechanical.
There are times, my dear boy, when being an exile from the past has its advantages. More years ago now than I would care to remember, I bought such a locket for my darling Emily. It was, if I recall correctly, on a rare trip to Boston, where I was to speak at the college. A jeweler in the best part of town, of course, and a pretty penny it cost me, too, as the saying went in those days. Of course, this is of no interest to you. Why should it be? And for all that, it is of no matter, as that locket and my dear Emily have been as dust for more years than anyone should have to endure. Nonetheless, to discourse about it has given me time to recall the knack to prizing the damn thing open. So that, voila.
The locket popped open, revealing, instead of the cameo that would normally be seen inside such a thing, a small, flashing light.
That's it? A little light? That's gonna bring them?
If it sends out a signal, then it does not matter what size it may be, my dear John Barrymore.
Guess we just have to wait and hope until they come. Or until those bastards out there make a move and maybe give us an opening. There's jack shit we can do except sit here and wait.
Maybe not. Maybe piss him off. Maybe force his hand.
How?
Lemme.
With the mines? No. We keep it tight, tactically. We don't risk personnel.
No risk. No mine exists that can beat Jack Lauren.
For fuck's sake, Jack. They detonated them by remote and could have blown up the WAG.
Sure, but they want us alive. And our WAG can see lines in the sand where the mine's under the earth. We hold all the cards, right, Doc?
I can see the lad's point. They want us alive, it seems. They have other plans for us. I dread to think what. He has the skill to avoid obvious traps, and it could force their hand, as the lad says.
Fine. Keep safe, Jack. The rest of you try to keep as hidden as possible, and get ready for incoming. Mildred, Doc, put out the fire.
Jack said nothing, just grinned, nodded, and moved away from them. They dispersed as much as was possible in the small space allowed by the buildup of dune and the bulk of the WAG. Doc climbed in, the better to handle the bulky Lama out of view of any prying digital eye. Ryan and JB clustered, using their bodies to shelter their actions. Mildred was able to check her ZKR with ease, as the target pistol was smaller than the other weapons, making it easier to conceal. Jack, for his part, wandered away from the group. His Colt Python was not a priority for him. As far as he could see, it was simple. He had to be sharp and quick to avoid getting blown up by the mines, but he couldn't fire back at it. If Secman came for them, then the others could fire. His priority was not to get blown to pieces. They all had their roles, and they were soon ready. And they would take their cue when Jack sprang to action. Jack wandered away from the body of the WAG, away from where the others were clustered. He looked out across the desert night. The sky above him was clear, the few stars in this sector of the sky glittering distantly, the crescent moon reflecting a gray light over the sandy topsoil. It was flat as far as could be seen, broken only by the darker craters of the mine detonations. To the horizon was a seemingly flat expanse. Jack's eyes were better suited to nocturnal activity than those of his companions, and as he studied the flat expanse, the flatness revealed itself to be a lie. The land was a series of planes and contours that dipped and curved into and against each other. The rolling waves of the contours were subtle, almost invisible to the naked eye at times. But as Jack stilled his breathing and allowed his body to fall into rhythm with the land around, so the secret movements of the earth were revealed to him. He could see how the chemstorms, the winds, the movements deep within the ground had all caused the surface to distort and warp. And with this, there were areas where the shifts in the natural curves of the earth had been disrupted by objects that had blocked the flow of energy and force, objects that Jack could make out more clearly the harder he looked. his breathing now slowed to such a degree that to a casual observer, he would have seemed to have ceased taking in oxygen, Jack could see the whole path of the minefield laid out in front of him. The crisscross of paths between them were as clear to him as if they had been painted in. All he had to do was follow the path. Of course, that didn't mean that the cold hearts wouldn't trigger one near him and catch him with the shrapnel. The size of the craters, let alone the memory of what it had been like inside the wag, was enough to make Jack aware that even a glancing encounter with one of the mines would be enough to kill him. But he had a safe haven, a triangle of cratered soil. It was a large enough space that, if forced to, it could provide an area where no exploding mine could get him. He had enough confidence in his instincts to take him that far, at least. He began to run, picking his way along the route that only he was able to see. Sure-footed, swift, he didn't stop to think. Instead, he listened to everything his body told him. He could feel his breathing, could feel the blood pumping around his circulatory system, could hear the hissing of his central nervous system in his ears. He could smell the distant dead fire, the sweat of his friends, the dry decay of lizards and small animals that had perished in the scorching heat and were slowly rotting, the damp of the sand and soil thrown up by the mines detonated earlier. He was aware of the very air around him as it vibrated in the night breezes. He knew that he wouldn't get far, knew that he would get only a few hundred yards at best before there was some kind of response.
What is that man doing? Hamill, disable the mines. He mustn't trigger one.
Little chance of that. It appears that he is able to see the layout of the network and is picking his way between the explosives.
How the... No, it doesn't matter. He mustn't get through. Not yet. We're not ready. This isn't how I planned it. How can we drive him back?
SMGs are operational near to the ranch. But do you wish to let him get that far? It would take him a half hour at current speed.
No, I don't want him to die, or even be injured if it can be helped. He's Stormgirl's friend, and we don't hurt our own.
There is a gas dispersal system that is operational. I could load it with tear gas and send remote units within the next 3 minutes. ETA 5. This would drive him back, but not necessarily harm him.
Good. Perfect. Initiate.
Howard turned to Christy. There was a look on his face that was equal parts childish rage and an imploring need for approval.
Why is he doing this?
I don't know. Jack was always an unknown quantity. He's not predictable.
She was lying, of course, and hoped that Howard's ingenuousness would allow her to get away with it. She had always been a poor liar, which had been a real problem at times, and this could be one of them. She knew what Jack was doing, drawing a response, breaking the impasse, giving Ryan and JB some idea about the forces they were up against, so that the armorer could estimate ordnance and Ryan could think tactics.
If only people would act like they should. Then it would be so simple. All I need is the chance to explain it to them, but they won't wait until I'm ready. Why do they...
Tear gas loaded. Ready to launch.
Good.
One of the monitors blurred briefly and flickered before changing from an exterior view to one of inside the bunker, a small room with what looked like airfoils fitted with rocket engines lined up, three abreast. Only the front two, farthest from the camera, were in use. Christy knew this as they carried a payload that the others lacked, and they were surrounded by multi-armed cylindrical robots that moved on wheels and tracks. It was a smooth, impressive operation as the robots readied the airfoils for launch, then moved away. It was only as they did this that it hit Christy. These were the workers of whom Sid had spoken. These were the remains of the original staff, their brains deployed in machinery, their humanity long since vanished. Christy felt sick. She was not one of the family. That could have been her. She couldn't imagine what it would be like to have your identity ripped from your body and placed in a tin can, to be slowly drained until there was nothing left of your essence. Did they know what they had once been? How had it felt to have your soul disappear? Was there a point where you ceased to exist? Where you were nothing, dead for all intents and purposes? Or was there just a small piece of awareness still in there somewhere, screaming impotently for release? Another reason to make sure that this hellish place was destroyed and the trapped souls given release. Her attention snapped back to the airfoils as the first row moved forward.
Deploy!
Christy could follow from monitor to monitor as the airfoils left their hangar and traveled up a shaft that led to the surface. The entrance to the shaft was well hidden, and it was only when they broke the surface, scattering sand and topsoil, that she was able to pinpoint the exits on the relevant monitor.
Launch success, 100%. Target arrival, 120 seconds and counting.
Do not worry, Storm Girl. Jack won't be hurt. The tear gas will merely be enough to force him back to where the others are. Sid, what are they doing?
They appear to be doing nothing, sir. It looks like they are, well, waiting.
Storm Girl, what are they doing?
Christy shrugged, even though she had a good idea.
I just don't know, Thunder Rider.